You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, we left our homes up in Bristol Bay for the waters of Miami's shore. With a hippo at the helm and our severance pay, we fly the pirate flag once more. Pirate radio with the ship and crew. We got wind in our sails and the sky is blue. There's a devil up our nose, so much work to do. For the pirate radio.
Guillermo, put it on the poll what you were talking about right before we went live. Key lime Kit Kat, yes or no? Because Guillermo was swearing somehow by the key lime Kit Kat. You stumbled upon it. Where? We'll get to David Sampson in a second. But how many details do you want to give people on? Were you hoarding them? You said it's limited edition, so you were telling people, hurry up and get as many as you can.
I haven't hoarded them yet, but I should think about it. So I was at CVS, Walgreens, one of those. And I was going to pay and I was like, man, I want a Kit Kat. And then I looked down and I saw like just a special display. It said special edition key lime pie Kit Kat. And I said, you know what? I like a Kit Kat and I like a key lime pie, but this may have gone too far. But it was like $1.50. So I said, you know what? Let me try this. So I got one of those. I got a regular Kit Kat just in case the key lime pie Kit Kat left a bad taste in my mouth. I got home an impulse buy, Dan. Back in my days of retail, they used to have what they called impulse towers where they had little trinkets. And the idea was to try to get someone to just grab a bunch of those things on the way out. And it worked with the key lime pie Kit Kat. So I get home, try the key lime pie Kit Kat. Incredible. Incredible. Maybe better than the actual Kit Kat.
Tasted exactly like a key lime pie. That's shocking. David, your thoughts here on what it is. Taste unseen or taste untasted, you would say what to what it is he's alleging there? The key lime pie Kit Kat better than the original?
I would give anything to taste a key lime Kit Kat, but I can't taste or smell anything still. So it would basically be just a Kit Kat.
David, yeah. How long has it been since you've been able to taste anything?
6 months, right? 6 months?
Yeah. So I've met with a bunch of doctors and they've all said that if you still have no taste and smell after 12 months, it may be gone forever. So it's been, I got COVID on January 20th. So we're coming on getting close to 6 months, but I've got time. I do these exercises where I smell licorice or coffee or garlic or onion. And about 10 days ago, I had a little bit of garlic smell and that made me happy, but I haven't been able to smell it since.
Are you a picky eater?
Well, now I'm not.
Well, that was what I was going to ask you. You could eat essentially anything now that you wouldn't have eaten before.
Yeah, it all tastes the same. So what they say is that your palate may actually change when you get, if you get your taste and smell back. So I have a hate food, which is olives, is my absolute hate food. I will not, if it touches anything, I can't eat it. And I'm going to try to eat olives. I actually did. I had a piece of vegetarian pizza because I still love the texture of pizza and candy, even though I can't taste it. And there was an olive on the pizza because I had to get it at the LA airport the other day and I didn't taste it.
What taste do you miss the most?
I miss candy. I miss licorice.
Oh, yes. Red, I'm assuming, right?
No, black.
Oh, wow.
Really?
I'm an all-black jelly bean. Good and Plenty is my favorite candy.
God. Better man than I am.
God. Oh, Jesus.
So the backstory of that is I used to be small when I was young. And so people in grade school would take stuff from me because there's nothing I could do about it. So what I always chose was to like things that no one would want to take. And no one liked black jelly beans or licorice, black licorice. So it became my favorite because I would always get it.
You are a monster. That's a funny backstory or not. It's a bit heartbreaking. Actually, you've started off in a couple of heartbreaking fashions because how worried are you that this seems like a dramatic lifestyle change to lose your taste and just these scents forever?
A tiny monster.
Yeah, so there's a lot of people dealing with a lot worse things than I am. I am quite fortunate, so I don't look at it as anything other than it's just a change. It's changed how I react to food. And the interesting thing is I forget that I've lost it every day. I'm like Drew Barrymore in 50 First Dates. I wake up assuming I've got my taste and smell, and then I'll go to a meal and people will say, wow, this is so good. And I'll say, God, I got a bad batch, or the chef didn't make this dish right today because it doesn't taste good. And then I have the epiphany, oh my God, I can't taste it. Because what it means is everything tastes the same and it just tastes like nothing. So it's just plain.
Do you like take advantage of this and eat like extraordinarily healthy foods, like a way healthier diet than you used to?
No, I've always been pretty healthy, but I crave the texture. So I still crave the texture of candy and pizza and things like that. And I'm training for a bunch of marathons, so I'm eating whatever I want whenever I want to. But no, I my brain is starting to remember what tastes are. So I can taste, like I had a Hershey's Kiss the other day, and I thought it was stale, not hard, but just sort of tasteless. But then something kicked in when I sucked on the Hershey's Kiss, which is how I eat Hershey's Kisses. I don't bite them. I'll suck them down. And I think I had the sense of what chocolate is.
Does anything that you eat actually satisfy you if you can't taste it?
So my stomach gets full, obviously. So in that regard, I would say, but in terms of, oh God, that's so good, or what a great restaurant, I shouldn't go to expensive restaurants because it's not worth it, but I still find myself doing it because the food is supposed to be good. So therefore I think it's good. So in my mind, I say, oh God, this restaurant is just not good anymore. So I've stopped actually going to nice restaurants because that is just a waste of money.
I can't imagine anything worse.
Yes, you can. Don't say that.
No, I mean, this is bad. Just of like, just inconveniences. Obviously there are things worse in life, but just in terms of daily inconveniences, this seems terrible.
Again, I have a different outlook, Chris. I think that it is what it is. So I'm lucky. My lungs were never compromised. I'm doing great. I'm healthy otherwise. It's just, it's annoying more than anything because
I know you
it
have
makes
to,
it.
That you have to say all that stuff and you're right, but it must just suck.
It totally sucks.
Guillermo, put it on the poll at Lebatard Show. Hershey's Kiss, bite it or let it melt down at Lebatard Show.
Way to press him, Chris. I mean, that was fantastic.
You really did. You got him to fold under the single swinging light bulb of interrogation. So what? You must have a couple of horror stories, though, about like drinking expired milk, or has it caused something terrible?
So I love where your head's at, because what's in my mind constantly is Minority Report when Tom Cruise got his eyes taken out and he went into the fridge where he had to recover and he took those moldy sandwiches. I don't know if you guys have seen Minority Report. So I think about that all the time. So I never used to look at anything. I would just smell it. Now I find myself throwing away anything that is a day past the expiration date, where normally I wouldn't have to do that, but I can't take the chance. And milk, I have actually stopped drinking all milk. I don't put it even in French toast, in my French toast mix anymore. I don't put it in cereal anymore, even though I normally eat cereal dry, because I'm just worried that even unexpired milk is going to be nasty and there'd be no way I'd know.
I wanted to talk to you when I saw all of this happen in baseball, because it seems fascinating to me, David, that everyone's cheating and it's rampant in a way that is so ingrained into the fabric of what's happening now that I'm numb to it. It's one of these scandals that I'm like, I don't even understand how much of an advantage these guys have when they do this. So from your perspective, give us what you find to be most interesting about what's happening right now in baseball with all this spider tax stuff.
What's most interesting is that position players were okay with pitchers using foreign substances to get command, but they're not okay with pitchers using foreign substances to make them better. Do you know that now foreign substances have become performance-enhancing substances? They're PESs. It's the same thing as doing steroids for the position players or the pitchers. They're able to do things they weren't able to do before. I've spoken to players. I once spoke to Stanton about this. When he saw a ball do something that it had never done before, the way you hit in Major League Baseball is you only have a quarter of a second to know where to put the bat, where the ball is going to be. And you learn where the ball is going to be. You see the spin if you can, and you put your bat where the spin should be when the ball gets to where into the hitting zone. But when balls do something different than they've always done, that's when these strikeouts happen. And it's just difficult for hitters to hit, which is why averages are down. So position players finally said it's enough. And they're calling out pitchers. And that doesn't happen very often because there's an understanding in baseball. Foreign substances, we're good with it. We're going to use rosin. We're going to use sunscreen. At Marlins Park, we had a vat of sunscreen, and we play with a roof. It's not to stop cancer. The sunscreen is used by players to make a mixture to use when they're pitching. I always loved when the sunscreen was out. I don't think you're understanding how funny that is to have sunscreen in a place where there's no sun. But when you start using other things and all of a sudden position players are thinking they can't make as much money as they used to because their numbers are so bad, then something happens. And baseball's just fumbled it. And it is such a nightmare right now. The memo they released is so bad. And the fact that they're making players stop cold turkey and giving players now a platform to say, I can't do it, I'm going to get hurt. And then they get hurt and they get to blame the commissioner for it. It's just a nightmare.
Is the reason that offense is the worst in that sport than it's been in more than half a century the fact that pitchers can use these substances?
It certainly is a contributing factor. Take a look at the way these balls move. There's all of these things on Twitter, these sites and these Twitter people who have tons of followers showing ball movement. And everyone just says, wow, look at that ball move. That doesn't happen by accident. It's not natural. It's not normal. That's why pitchers are getting hurt, because they're throwing 98, 99 all the time. That's not normal. The movement of the ball is not normal, and that's got to be done with something. And now we know what it is. Of course, we always knew, though.
What do you make of Tyler Glasnow saying the reason I got hurt is because they took away these substances from me?
I think that that is the union getting ready for a collective bargaining negotiation. That's why Scott Boras made the statement he made. That's why Zach Gallen, who's a Scott Boras client, made the statement he made about Mike Hill. That's why Garrett Cole.
What is that statement? Can you just tell people, so that the people who do not know, because Michael Hill is a friend of yours, what happened there?
Michael Hill used to be the president of baseball operations for the Marlins and was let go by Jeter at the end of last season. He is now in charge of on-field operations at Major League Baseball. Zach Gallen is a pitcher who was traded to the Marlins by the Cardinals for Marcelo Zuna and then traded by the Marlins to the Diamondbacks for Jazz Chisholm. Zach Gallen's been hurt. He's now not hurt, and he decided to go public yesterday saying, in my last organization, we were told to use these foreign substances. Scott Boras's agent made a statement saying Mike Hill is a part of an organization like all organizations who tell their players to use foreign substances. And I know Mike Hill, and I was in an organization. We don't say to a pitcher, use steroids, or a position player. We don't say use spider tack, but we're okay when you do it until it goes too far. It's the same way I was with steroids. I knew the players were using steroids. And listen, I want to win as many games as possible. We're going to educate you that it's not good for your body and that it's illegal and that you're going to get hurt and it could impact your career, it could impact your sex life. But if you want to do it and hit home runs, I'm all in. When it comes to foreign substances, it's not illegal. It doesn't hurt you physically and it makes us a better team because you get to pitch better. I'm all in. But to call out Michael Hill specifically the way that's been done is just inappropriate. And it's done not because of Mike Hill. It's done because of the collective bargaining agreement that is up on December 1st. And there's going to be a fight like you can't believe. There's going to be a work stoppage. And it's going to be totally super depressing for the fans, all because of the ego of certain agents and the ego of certain owners.
You are positive there is going to be a work stoppage, that before the end of the year, there's going to be a work stoppage.
It's not like the sunrise, Dan. What do you mean I'm positive? No, I'm not positive.
I just haven't heard
this.
You said it flatly. You said it absolutely. And I have not heard that a work stoppage is coming nearly for sure. That I know the collective bargaining agreement is a problem. I'm guessing that the reason the penalties aren't stiffer for this stuff is solely because of the collective bargaining agreement, correct? Baseball can't actually come down on these guys.
Yeah, there's going to be part of the new collective bargaining agreement will actually be a rule about what substances can be used, and they're going to teach the umpires. I think the umpires will end up checking the players before the games to say, yep, that substance is good. Yep, that substance is good. Nope, get that out of your glove. And I think that is truly going to happen. And I do think there's going to be a work stoppage because the rancor that exists between players and management right now, and I've seen bad over 18 years. I mean, distrust and anger and vile bile, but it's worse now than ever. So I do believe there will be some sort of work stoppage, but I don't believe that we'll miss any games in 2022. I think that the off season will be screwed up, but the season will be okay.
The reason I asked that question that way, I know when you get it wrong, people come after you, like with the Major League Baseball All-Star Game being moved to Denver. You didn't think that logistically that could happen. But generally speaking, when you say something's going to happen around here, like, for example, Theo Epstein trying to create a path to get to commissioner of baseball, that stuff happened. So you are saying that there is a great likelihood that we'll get this season. It's not going to happen before this season, but when they go into the off season, we're going to not start baseball on time, and it's going to be a messy one. That's going to be a long time where a work stoppage is in play because of you've been in at this for a long time, David. For you to say it's worse than it's ever been when you've lived through work stoppages.
So I actually have not lived through work stoppages. The last one was in 1994, and I got into the game in 1999. And that's something that Bud Selig was super proud of, as well as the union back in the day of Gene Orza and Don Fear. It was trouble and combative, but they always found a way to get an agreement done. The biggest problem that happened in baseball is when Tony Clark took over the union, and Tony Clark is a former player, and Tony Clark wanted all these things that were player comfort things in the last collective bargaining agreement. He wanted chefs. He wanted better planes. He wanted better food. He wanted better off days. He wanted different start times. All of it was crap when we were voting for the CBA. We were so happy that the players were focused on such meaningless stuff that they forgot about all the economic stuff. And that's all we cared about. And now what'll be interesting is they brought in an absolute killer into the union, including Boris and all the executive council or Boris clients. And now they realize they don't want to get taken advantage of. But the owners don't want to give in. They love what's been happening, and they lost a ton of money in COVID, so they're not going to give up any economic advantages, and that's why there's going to be a work stoppage.
And you foresee what happening, the end result of this scandal and what will happen next year when it comes to what gets negotiated. What do you think is going to happen here?
It will not be a blanket, no substances except rosin, which is what is now what they're doing. The cold turkey that everyone's talking about, they're going to have to allow some sort of gripping agent to be used other than rosin by players. And they're just going to make it a different rule. So it's not a violation of the rule. What the players did wrong here is they went too far. They're like children where you gave them an inch and they took a foot. It was okay to use the sunscreen and the rosin and the pine tar, but then technology got better. Then they realized they could use more stuff that would make their pitches even nastier. And they weren't quiet about it. But then their performance got so good, the offense got so bad, that the parents, meaning MLB and the commissioner and the owners, said, you know what? Enough. And that's what happened with the substances. But I think there'll be a rule that's more in the middle of cold turkey versus spider tack. It's going to be back in the middle.
The Dan Le Batard Show with Stu Gatz is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's time for a self-check-in. How's your social battery right now? Is it drained or bursting with energy? Similar to how a battery stores energy before eventually running out, individuals with a social battery may feel a need to recharge or withdraw from social situations after a certain amount of time. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with work or social gatherings. What's the right amount of socializing for you, and how do you recharge? Maybe you drive around people, or maybe you need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/DLB today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/DLB.
David, I wanted to ask you further about the Zach Gallen comments and Scott Boras having a go at Michael Hill. How much of that is kind of a personal vendetta with Michael Hill, or was it more a signal towards the fact that he works for Major League Baseball and there is that potential work stoppage coming?
I think it's 30-70. He's not a big fan of Mike Hill. He's not a big fan of me, because we would get in the way of him dealing with Jeffrey, and Scott Boras will only deal with owners. He doesn't like it when presidents or GMs get involved, because owners, he can tap their emotion. He can say to Mike Ilitch, hey, you want to get a championship before you die, don't you? He can say to Jeffrey Lurie, you want to get a second championship, don't you? Here's how to do it. He can say to Ted Lerner, you want to get one, right? Well, sign my guys. But presidents and GMs don't fall for that emotion. We don't care. So Boris doesn't want to talk to us.
Does any of this ever stick to Manfred, or is he just protected by the owners?
All that Manfred cares about, just so you guys are very clear, because there's a great misunderstanding what the role of the commissioner is in all sports. Rob Manfred cares about 23 owners.
So you say 23 because specifically the majority. You're just saying, or the things to get votes ratified, because you only need 23.
You need 23 owners to give you an extension on your contract. You need 23 owners to get a new collective bargaining agreement. You need 23 owners to get things done. And that's what he's focused on. So when Rob Manfred does something, he's not flying by the seat of his pants. That's not what he's like. He is extremely calculating. He's extremely Machiavellian. He understands what his role is, and he understands self-interest, self-preservation. It's not a matter of loving the game or not loving the game. People say he's not a fan. Who cares? We don't hire a commissioner to be the fan. We'll hire Marlins man if we want a fan to be the commissioner. We want someone who's going to represent the interests of the owners and grow the game with money. That's what the commissioner's job is.
David, I would so fall for Scott Boras coming to me and saying, hey, sign my guy. You want to win a world championship before you die? Sign my guy. I would sign every guy. I mean, that is crazy.
Well, but do you write the checks?
No, he's great at writing other people's checks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And stealing other people's checks. Yes, it's not when it's...
I mean, Dan will sign them.
It's not when it's his money.
Do you know how quickly you'd blow through $50 million if you were in charge, Stu? Do you have any idea?
I do, actually, yes.
Is Manfred good? Has Manfred been good?
He's gotten a rough deal, right? I mean, you can't be good during COVID. It's a no-win situation trying to deal with COVID. You could argue that Silver did it better, although I'm not sure he did. You could argue Goodell is better, but I'm not sure he is. But what Manfred is he's a businessman. He's a labor attorney. He is someone who is extremely smart and doesn't fall for things that other people may fall for. And that's frustrating to the union. It's frustrating to Scott Boras for sure. But Manfred doesn't care about any of that. So what's interesting is that Mike Hill released a statement, which was written by the PR people for Major League Baseball, of course, not by Mike, because that's how it works in baseball. And he responded to Zach Gallen's statements. And that's interesting. I talked about it on Today's Nothing Personal, because that does not happen often. Because what we're taught in baseball is you ignore Boras. Don't mention his name. Don't talk about anything he's talking about. Don't give him the platform or the power. But MLB had to respond to what Boras said.
Why?
Because they're losing the PR battle right now and losing it badly. And that is something they don't want. They still believe going into collective bargaining that having the people's side and having them, having fans be on owner's side matters. I always spoke to the commissioner and to all the executives saying, who cares what the fans think? Our job is to get the best deal we can. We don't need the PR. We don't need to attract the attention of anybody with what we're doing. Just negotiate the best deal we can for ourselves. And then people forget about it, because then you're playing games.
Do you think Michael Hill responded to kind of save the look of MLB or to save himself? Because last night when that stuff was coming out, I felt like Michael Hill is going to be the fall guy for this, because the way the Astros thing played out, they looked for a fall guy. It wasn't going to be the players, so they punished management. So it felt like that's kind of where this was going until he responded publicly.
Yeah, Mike Hill is paid by Rob Manfred, and Rob Manfred knows very well that Mike Hill had nothing to do with it. Mike Hill is just the name on the memo. Mike Hill is the one who speaks to the umpires and speaks to the managers and speaks to the players about stuff that's going on field. It's not that Mike Hill would ever be that kind of fall guy. And frankly, Theo is the one who's brought in to do all these things at baseball and change the game and make the bases bigger and all the pitch clocks and all the stuff that Theo's trying to do. So I was surprised that Theo did not speak up at all and that MLB did not have him speak up, but they're protecting him for whatever reason.
David, I'm surprised to hear you say that your feeling was that the PR doesn't matter. Do you not think that the overall decline in interest in baseball can be associated, at least in part, to decisions like these or public missteps like these, where there becomes less of an attachment to the institution of baseball, however nebulous that might be?
Yeah, I was actually talking about the PR surrounding collective bargaining. Remember during COVID when there was the fighting going on between the commissioner and all of the players, and the commissioner said, we may have to cancel the season, and he got absolutely torched, including on this show. he was trying to get people on his side, and that was the mistake. When I say that baseball doesn't care about PR, it's in terms of an agreement and in terms of getting the provisions they want. They care way too much about PR because they're jealous of the other leagues who get better PR. And so sometimes they do things solely for PR. And when you do that, that doesn't work either. It has to be organic.
One of the things happening in the NCAA, I don't know if you guys saw this, but Arizona State now and Herm Edwards being investigated for doing all sorts of things in recruiting and COVID illegal things. And I just feel like there's a general numbness where we assume everyone's cheating. In empirical terms, David, outside of the game getting slower, which I think is what hurts baseball the most in a fractured attention span, changed society, I don't think there's any actual damage to this. I think the integrity of the sport has been so befouled and the numbers have been so distorted and the way it's played has changed so much that I actually don't think there's any real consequences to the cheating other than nobody hits a baseball for three innings and you're going to a park to watch three innings of strikeouts.
Were there consequences to the steroid era?
I think it was great for baseball. The steroid era was great. It was medicine for baseball. Brought them back after a work stoppage. This, I think, is a net nothing. I think it's a net nothing. You don't lose fans because pitchers are cheating. Steroids brought fans out to the ballpark.
So you have to put that in perspective. So from baseball standpoint, if steroids worked, what about steroids worked? Balls were going into McCovey's cove, right? McCovey's cove. Say that five times quick, Stu.
No, thanks.
So, yep. So that is what happens with steroids. That's why it was so good. It's funny. There was that whole, do you remember, it's not even good to say. I don't even know if we can say it live. Chicks dig the long ball. Remember that whole commercial? That was a thing back then. And I'm sorry if that's offensive, but that was back then. I don't think they would use that now. Nobody says, hey, chicks dig the no-hitter. Right? Chicks dig strikeouts.
Right, no.
They love the walks. Ooh, give me more walks. Mm. So baseball's trying to say, hey, we've gone too far the other way. And so now they're trying to bring it back. It would be funny to me if part of the collective bargaining agreement allowed for players to get back on performance-enhancing drugs who are the hitters. That would be one way to combat this.
Well, here's a funny question, David. If somehow the use of substances increased offense in that sport, would anybody in charge have a problem with it?
Nope.
I love it.
but these substances decreased offense because only the pitchers were using it and the balls were moving in ways that the hitters couldn't hit it. Steroids, pitchers and hitters were using steroids. So while it was cheating, it was more of an even playing field.
No, but actually, pitchers were using steroids trying to keep up, like Roger, let's say. But at the end of the day, steroids are much better for hitters. Steroids by pitchers were really used, like what Andy Pettit said, used to try to recover from injury faster to get back on the field, because that's one of the things that certain steroids can do. But the majority of the people using them were the offensive players, were the hitters, and that wasn't used for to cover injury or to replace greenies. It was used to actually give you the ability to do better than you could do otherwise.
Ryan Spader, a baseball analyst, wrote on Twitter the other day, I've had enough. I think I'm coming out with everything tomorrow, going to sleep on it. And then he came out with everything that he had. Everything I'm about to say was verified by more than one player. I do not mean to burn anyone, and I love baseball. I've just had enough of this bullshit. The Royals were the first team with a full analytics and video department close to their dugout, doing so in 2015, their World Series championship year. How they used it, I do not know. The Yankees had cameras in left, center, and right, all pointing at the pitcher's glove rather than the catcher to pick up his grip. And then you see that Aaron Judge's home and road splits are ridiculous in terms of when he was at home, he mashed the ball with help. And when he wasn't, he didn't. The Dodgers had an employee who was caught setting up cameras at Minute Maid Park wearing an MLB polo shirt when he should have been wearing a Dodgers polo during the 2017 World Series. This one hurts to say. My favorite player ever, Chase Utley, was the biggest cheater of all time. As insane as it sounds, I've heard this from multiple players. Adrian Beltre had a buddy with binoculars in dead center who would wave a undershirt if he was getting something off speed in 2017. And again, his home road splits are ridiculous as well. How much is real here, David?
What's real is that you just said undershirt, and that's not what the quote was. That made me smile. And it's absolutely guaranteed that this is going on with players and with teams. I was a part of it. We're looking for every, and I said this on the show during COVID when it was just me and Mikey. I said, hey, we of course were trying to steal signs at all times. There were people who were assigned to do nothing but steal the signs and figure out the signs, both from the catcher and even from the third base coach of the other team. That was their job because we weren't playing the bench anyway. And we had cameras, we had executives, we had every, and everyone knew, the GM, the manager, everyone. I don't know that I even discussed it with Jeffrey because why would I bother? So some owners could claim they don't know, but everyone else does. And to say that Chase Utley, I just don't like platitudes like that, like something so binary. He's the greatest, the biggest cheater of all time. Maybe only in the specter of cheaters you spoke to or who you know, but I don't want to put that on Chase Utley because you better come out with something better than Chase Utley's the biggest cheater of all time. You better have proof that he did something above and beyond what everybody else was doing. And I'm not sure he has that or he would have come out with it.
Wait, so David, it just appears to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, the Astros were just better at this than everyone else.
That's not a peer. We've talked about that.
Yeah.
You're 100% right. They were simply better at it. And we were jealous of them. I remember so well talking about the fact that we were not able to do what other teams were doing, not just by developing players and drafting players, and we got caught with bad signings and bad trades. We couldn't cheat as well as the other teams. And I would sit with the other executives and say, what's wrong with us? Even if we can't figure out how to develop a good player or scout a good player, can't we at least cheat as well as the other teams?
So you, so now, like, in the role of pundit, do you, like, castigate teams that are cheating? And why did you not feel when you were in baseball that there was some, I guess, purity to it and that you didn't want to cheat? Like, why did you feel that it was okay to cheat when you were in it?
What are we, in a convent? What are you talking about? Wait, you think I had like a moral dilemma in my brain? Oh my God, I can't do that. That would be terrible to try to steal someone's signs. I'm not exactly stealing their pension. I literally don't even understand what you're talking about.
Okay, but David,
your question is, so tell me about what was your morality? And he's like, what are you talking about? Morality? I'm trying to win. I'm not trying to help people in a nursing home.
But the only reason this is a news story is because people are presumably bent out of shape over the notion of cheating.
You're totally right. No, but he's a scoundrel. But he's telling you, because it's nothing personal, this ain't a .org. Like, everybody is trying to beat everybody for money, and that's business, and sports is business, and just because fans want to be Pollyanna about it, he's in the middle of it, and he's telling you, don't be silly. We were all trying to out-cheat the next guy if we could get away with it.
I couldn't possibly add anything to that.
So then I guess the question is, like, what's to stop you from break? Like, did you attempt to break every rule in the rule book, essentially?
The rule book is this thick. What are you doing? No, I did not read the rule book rule by rule and have a committee saying, how can we break rule 749, part 4, sentence G? No.
But
what I said is, what rules can we break that can help us win more games? Because everyone else is doing it. We might as well try to do it too.
The important ones, Chris, is what he's saying. Okay?
Right. Yeah.
I think the audience is with you, by the way, Whittingham, but he's just cutting through it coldly and telling you that executives aren't doing that math. You either try and find winning in the margins, however it is you can, or you will lose to the people who find it. Like, it's not like, who was viewed as a moral sort of executive who would never dabble in this sort of stuff? Was Dombrowski out
here?
Oh,
yeah. Definitely. He would not do anything. No. Take the high road every time. Hold on. Let me look through the Encyclopedia Britannica of former executives. Hold on. Let me look.
Let us know when you get to one.
Oh, he definitely did. Oh, no. He did too. Wait. No. Yeah. Yeah. Nope. None of them. Zero.
Is the problem, though, that fans care about cheating, but only when the other teams are cheating, and no one really cares when their own team is cheating as long as you win a World Series, right?
Those Astro fans are despondent, aren't they? They're crushed.
Like, if you told me the Cubs cheated in 2016, it's not going to make me, like, be sad that I celebrated them winning the World Series for the last 5 years.
Can we just, the word cheat bothers me a little bit. So when you do something that you know is against the rules, but you also know that while it may be giving you an advantage, you still need to perform, right? So that's like when I do something. Is it cheating when I put lifts in my shoes?
Good point.
Yes.
Do you?
Because why? Well, you, tell me the impact
it's
that's having.
Dishonest. You're being dishonest about what your height actually is.
I actually don't wear lifts because they're too uncomfortable for me. But believe me, I've thought about it. I used to love dressing up and going to costume parties, and I would always dress up like as Madonna or something. And I would wear heels because I loved the concept of actually being able to dance with a girl in middle school or high school where I could put my hands on the over the waist of the girl instead of on top because they were all so much taller than I. So it is something. But that's sort of cheating, right? You're doing it in a way to try to be better. And the concept, have you ever heard this, cheat to compete? We're not doing anything that is hurting people to the point where we are risking their lives. This is sports. This is competition on the field. I think people just need to take a bit of a breath here.
I don't want to be a broken record, but this is all good for baseball. Like we spent the last hour talking
You're right,
about
Chris,
it. Like,
yes,
David, is
yes.
this bad that the baseball's in the news? Like, nobody is, who's really not watching baseball? If you were watching baseball, you're still watching baseball.
There's not been one fan who went away because of the sign stealing, because of steroids, because of foreign substances. And the fact, I'd rather, you know, talking about, you could talk about Shohei Ohtani and you could talk about the San Francisco Giants and the White Sox, but guess what? Boring. Totally boring. You wouldn't spend 5 seconds on the San Francisco Giants on this show, would you?
Well, we did the other day just talking about Brandon Belt.
That's
and
right.
We were,
yes.
we were enjoying
yes.
that.
Brandon Belt.
He's still there playing first base. I mean, it's crazy.
Are you tired of snooty wines and their old world wine culture? Confused by words like malolactic fermentation? Yeah, we are too. So with 19 Crimes, you can do the fancy schmancy tilt, sip, smell. Ooh, I think it tastes like old red cherry, a little bit of wood and mahogany, a little leather. You can do all that stuff or don't. 19 Crimes is the rebel of wine culture telling stories of rogues and rule breakers who overcame adversities. From convicts banished to Australia to the legendary icon Snoop Dogg himself, 19 Crimes wine is defiant by nature, bold in character, and always uncompromising. 19 Crimes, the official wine of the UFC, pick up in stores nationwide or online at 19crimes.com. Enjoy responsibly. Copyright 2024, Sonoma, California.
When players like Mike Fiers say that they feel guilt about the cheating because they cost other players their livelihoods potentially getting sent down, you just think that that's naive?
Whatever.
Oh,
Mike Fiers, right? I'm not, don't get me started on him, please. I mean, it's,
please,
he violated several rules. You don't snitch, ever. Right,
that's just the rule you can't break.
That's the only rule that we adhere to is the don't snitch rule.
Is there another rule?
Trying to cheat everywhere else. You've just laid bare that everyone in baseball is trying to cheat, but don't you dare snitch, you immoral shit.
Fire trace.
It's unbelievable. Like, that's where you apply the morality. Like,
that's the line. I will do anything I have to do, but I will never tell on someone else. Now, it doesn't mean that I will not draw to the attention of umpires during a game when I think the Frank Robinson or the Expos or another team is doing something to violate the rules, or when I see another player being so obvious. Do you remember when Michael Pineda had the foreign substance that was on his neck? I don't know if you guys remember this. I don't remember what year it was. It's
yeah,
certainly
like a different skin tone.
It was totally insane. When we see that, we're going to say something. And we're doing that because we want teams to try harder when they're cheating and not be obvious about it.
Okay, very good. So Andy Pettit during a World Series game was tipping his pitches. He got bombed and the Yankees lost. What is the greatest example you have in your Marlins history of cheating successfully? Of when you guys did something and it's memorable to you because you were able, and catching a pitcher tipping pitches isn't actually cheating, but what's an example of a successful cheat by the Marlins while you were there?
Yeah, so when you say tipping pitches, that's something you also look for, and that is, again, there's no rule about any of that. That is something you do want to do, and Jose Fernandez used to tip pitches sometimes, and we would talk to him about it because it's like a tell in poker. You don't know you're doing it. That's what the definition of a tell is. And when you discover the tell, you don't say anything. But in baseball, it doesn't work that way because when a good pitcher gets rocked, you have to say either one, you're hurt, or two, you're tipping pitches. Because pitchers who get swings and misses, When they're not getting swings and misses, that means hitters know what's coming. So that was the first thing. The second thing is we would screw around with the roof, and we would screw around with the grass, and we would screw around with the sprinkler as a pro player. And what we did is that we would want to take the other visiting team out of its rhythm. Baseball is a very rhythmic sport. BP's at a certain time, the anthem's at a certain time, pitchers warm up at a certain time. And we would do things that would interrupt the rhythm of visiting teams as much as we could.
Like, what would you be doing with the sprinklers and the grass?
So we would cut the grass in a certain way, depending on what the opponent was. If it's an opponent with speed at the top of their lineup, we would cut the grass in a way that would make the grass longer, so the ball would shorter, so the ball would get to the fielder faster. We would do something in the outfield. Ichiro had specific ways that he liked the grass cut in the outfield, and we would cut it that way for him. But when we knew that we were playing against other teams and we would be told that those players liked the outfield a certain way, we'd cut the grass differently for them. When we knew the weather was going to be bad, sometimes we'd keep the roof open and make it really hot in the ballpark for visiting BP. Sometimes a pro player, we would make sure that the tarp was not on in proper time, so BP would get canceled more than it should have. So we would try, again, anything to disrupt rhythm.
When it worked, would you guys celebrate? How would you celebrate? Were there high fives, you and the grounds crew? How does this work, David?
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, we wouldn't involve the grounds crew. You just tell them what to do. We're not saying to the ground, we're not implicating the grounds crew by saying, hey, we've got this team coming in, so do this. We just say, here's what we want, here's what we want. And they don't ask questions, and that's their job, not to ask questions. They just do what we want. But no, you don't celebrate that, because, by the way, when we're on the road, teams are doing that to us.
Right.
So it's totally normal.
Guillermo, put it on the poll. Is the grounds crew's job not to ask questions?
How much is that affected by football season in September, though?
Well, back at Pro Player, we used to love that when we had the dirt and we had the chalk lines. Sometimes we'd keep the chalk lines actually stronger than other times because it can be distracting to fielders. If you remember how Dolphin Stadium, when baseball would be playing, there'd be chalk lines. I used to love watching the Dolphins play on dirt between first and second base. It was part of the field. It used to make me laugh. But listen, the bottom line of this show is what people don't understand is that what you call cheating, what we're calling trying to gain every possible advantage to do the job that we're paid to do. It's that simple.
David Sampson makes a rogue and renegade appearance today on the second edition of Cinephile. What do you have for us on that front, Chris Cody?
I just want to tease the episode with a 2.5 second clip. Everyone thinks Adnan Virk, nicest man in the world. Well, I unleash David Sampson on him, and Uh-oh. It makes Adnan Virk say this.
Uh-oh. Support Cinephile, Dave. You don't have to be a dick about it.
Oh, my God.
What?
Oh, my God.
Whoa.
Holy sh... What is that? Adnan Virk? What happened?
Well, first of all,
Dave. You don't have to be a dick about it.
I got the Zoom information, and it was the Zoom room that I used to do the appearances here on the Local Hour. I didn't know that. I thought we were doing a taping of the Local Hour. That was the presentation. And then I get in the room, and Adnan's there. And Adnan's fine and everything, but he thinks he knows about movies. He's just gotten cocky since he joined your ship, right? He thinks he's this amazing guy. And he doesn't know any more about movies than I do. He knows way less. He just likes to quote them because he does research, and I'm doing everything off the top of my head. I could do an entire show with IMDb tab open and impress you with my trivial knowledge of crap, but I don't do it that way. So there's Adnan. So I just decided to join the show because he was talking about movies, of course, that I had seen. But I found it to be less than interesting, especially when he called me a dick and my name's not even Richard. And he doesn't know me to call me that. He doesn't deserve to be able to call me that. You got to meet me first and then call me that.
You don't have to be a dick about it.
Shocking. Cinephile.
Madman.
Rate, subscribe, and review. We'll get to David Sampson's movies in a second. Why are you shaking your head no, Billy? Just how generally
just
lazy Stugatz is. Yeah. I appreciate the audience. The audience... suggested to me, I had not seen this, a Netflix comedy special Bo Burnham did that was extraordinary during the pandemic. It's about mental illness. It's art. It's funny. I haven't seen anything like it before. So thank you to the audience members who recommended the Bo Burnham comedy special, because It is comedy for our times in the last year. And David, what are you reviewing this week?
Well, can we talk about the Bo Burnham, or did you talk about it more?
No, I haven't talked about it, but I just thought it was a work of art because he took us in the pandemic into a closed space where he was wrestling with his mental illness. He used to have panic attacks when he'd get up on stage. He's one of the most famous YouTubers that there have been. He's a brilliant comedian and musician, and what he put together is a work of art, but it also seemed lonely and painful and depressing and hard.
So I had never heard of him because I am old and white. And it turns out to me, when I was told by someone from Nothing Personal, I get movie suggestions all the times by listeners who rate, review, and subscribe to Nothing Personal when you ask them to, that I thought he was the guy from Promising Young Woman. That's where I recognized him from. That's it. But I was told to watch this, so I did. And I didn't move the entire time. I was devastated watching it because he wasn't acting. And I didn't realize how brilliant he was. And the movie about Instagram is one of the song about white women and their Instagram was one of the funniest songs I've ever heard. The pain, and when he talked about suicide, when he talked about the dark loneliness, the depression, and he was the editor, the cameraman, the writer, the producer, the director, and the one-man show. He did everything because he was alone during the pandemic, and you could see the process unfolding. If you haven't seen it, I strongly suggest it. It's the second best. Derek Delgadio is the best thing I've seen, sort of the one-man show type of thing since the pandemic started. But this one is a must-see. And it's not an easy watch, but you will laugh, but you'll also cry, and that makes it pretty compelling.
Well, you'll also be amazed by the range of talent and brilliance, because the song you mentioned, I didn't even think was the best one, the Welcome to the Internet song that he did, where it's 5 minutes of just straight brilliance that I don't know. I can't believe that that guy, how long that had to take to make just those 5 minutes, just smart writing, great performance, and funny camera work. I can't suggest it strongly enough.
And at the end, he actually show you, if you stay till the end of the credits, there's a payoff. He shows you a little bit about how he films some of the things, and you realize to get a shot that lasts 1 second in a montage, what he had to do to prepare that, being solo and being alone in this dark room, in this white, it felt like a padded cell to me. And I assume that's what he was going for. There's no art on the wall, but it's a very artful presentation using computers and what they can do. This type of show could never have happened before computers and the internet and all of the things that are now that we're able to do. But it took something to make that show that I can't even. He never told us how long he took to film it, though.
But wait, going back for a second, what's wrong with having tiny pumpkins on my Instagram feed? I love tiny pumpkins, David.
Good question.
Why is that funny? A pumpkin? It's just a cute little pumpkin. Put a little crown on my dog, flower crown. What's wrong with that?
Do you actually think I'm going to take your bait? Like, do you actually think there is a chance that I'm going to engage
what
with you on this subject?
What is the movie that you are reviewing this week, David Sampson?
You and Jessica. Okay, I want to get serious and talk about a documentary I watched called Roll With Me. Since we're talking about serious things, Roll With Me is a documentary from 2017 about a man in a wheelchair who was a drug addict, and he decided he was about to die. And instead of dying of a drug overdose, he decided to wheel across the country in a regular wheelchair, not a motorized wheelchair, not one of these built up, you know, Oscar Pistorius Blade Runner wheelchairs. I'm talking just a regular wheelchair where you have to use your gloves. And they documented it. And it's the story of the seven people plus him who went across country, and he went from California to his home on Long Island. It is incredibly emotional. And what it shows is that the human spirit is something that has no end. If you put your mind to something, you can do it. And he saved his life. He saved other people's lives. If you are addicted to drugs or pills or heroin, there is a way out. Just like if you're having suicide thoughts, there's a way out. There's numbers to call. If you see Roll With Me, you'll be inspired and realize that you are so lazy, right, in your life. And I try to run. I already ran my workout this morning, but I felt so lazy watching Roll With Me, watching what he did. It's a great documentary. It's on Netflix. It's called Roll With Me.
Guillermo, put it on the poll, please. Should Oscar Pistorius's nickname have been Blade Leg? at Le Batard Show. Nothing Personal is the podcast. If you want sort of an undistilled, pure cut of how the business of sports works, Nothing Personal, you should go check it out, because you don't hear what you just heard there, which is a former major league executive just telling you, yep, we were all trying to cheat.
You never hear
morality
it.
Be damned. David, thank you for being on with us. We appreciate it, sir.
Oh, Stugatz, Tua.
What?
That's it. He just did some good things at practice this morning.
Oh, he threw 5 interceptions on
Tuesday. Well, nah, we don't need to worry about that. He's gotten better.
I was going to say, reports that he's thrown a lot of interceptions.
I was re-listening to Tuesday's pod as Tua threw 5 interceptions in a practice. And I was like, this isn't going well. But, I mean, like, fair play. He said, like, I was just trying to be aggressive and I kept on throwing them. But
you just threw a couple of TD darts at the end.
A couple of darts.
Yep. You heard that, or buddy? The corners are looking good. Always a way to spin this.
Dolphins training camp, 0-0 game.
Weird shit's happening, man. Nadal's pulling out of Wimbledon, Olympics, really? The NBA's falling apart.
Yeah.